Kind of towards the end here, the defense of or theodicy is kind of going forward, looking at what kind of we talked about in the beginning of kind of a positive claim and a negative claim. And so sometimes people like to use different definitions, use different words. And so he goes on to kind of talk about this positive evidence and negative evidence as well. So some Christian philosophers make a distinction between a theodicy, right, a reason for why God allows evil, right. And a defense. There are reasons that God allows evil.
Right.
So in the parlance,
that evil and God are compatible.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, and they're kind of, again, two different avenues, two prongs, but right. It's still kind of, they'll probably overlap, but they have different reasons for existing. So in the parlance of philosophical discussions, the theodicy, technically speaking, is a positive case explaining why God allows, doesn't prevent or decrees evil in the world. It outlines precisely what God, what good and sufficient reasons God has for doing whatever he's doing that evil is allowed to exist.
Right. And on the other hand, the defense seeks to answer charges brought up against God in the light of evil, namely how God can be exonerated from the charges that he is less than God in the face of evil, or that he is culpable, right, that is blamable for evil in some way. So it merely seeks to show, notice, that broadly speaking, this is the defense, there is no logical inconsistency between the existence of God and the existence of evil, right? So the theodicy attempts to explain why God allows evil. The defense just shows there's no logical consistency between the existence of God and the existence of evil. Many believe that defense, therefore, carries a lighter burden than a theodicy, right? But that's not always satisfying, right? We got a logical defense, yeah, but, I'm going through this suffering, right? So the problem with a mere defense is that it seems to, he tells us, weasel out of the hard questions that people face, right?
Right. And so, again, it depends on the question kind of going into it, especially if you're doing kind of a formal debate. That formal debate is really going to say, if you have the question is resolve, there is no good reason for the Holocaust. Okay, well, then the positive claim by the other opponent is, I have to provide all the reasons why that to be the case, that there is no good reason. I would say that takes a lot to do, even you're almost proving the negative in that capacity. Yeah, really. So all I have to do coming into it is argue either against all your positions or give you one good reason for why it could be the case, and I can win the debate. But winning the debate is not always winning the audience, and so that's why Christensen, I think, has probably more focused on the theodicy part of things. Now, it could be that some uncertainty exists about God's reasons for purposing or permitting evil. Perhaps the Bible is altogether silent on the question. I hope to, he hopes to argue later that the Bible is not silent, and we'd probably agree with him there, but we should not be presumptuous. He says he believes that the Bible makes the case for a broad, all-encompassing theodicy, but this doesn't mean that such a theodicy answers every question that arises, especially when it comes to specific instances of evil. And so, if you're saying, well, why did the flood happen? Okay, we could probably point to Scripture, the revealed will of God, to say, here's the reasons why the flood occurred, and say it wasn't gratuitous evil, and also that it the greater good outweighed the evil. And so we could probably make the case for that from God's revealed will. But something like, why did I stub my toe today of all days when I didn't want my toe to hurt? Well, I'm going to have a harder time pointing to you to a reason, because maybe 22 years down the line, you're going to remember that corner of that house that you're like, oh, I stubbed my toe on, and you need to run to save a burning bus full of nuns, and you need to put it out, and you not having stubbed toes will help you do
that's
that.
That's right. You avoid the stubbed toe.
So 22 years later is how I can point to you, but I can't point it to you the next day.
Right.
Because I have to wait 22 years. Make it so hard on me to prove the existence of good and evil.
Right. And so he says here, in wrapping up this particular chapter, he says, in either case, the response to evil, that is, the defense or the theodicy, to be explored, he says, in the coming chapters of his book, he's going to use the term theodicy and defense somewhat loosely and interchangeable, right? Furthermore, few theodicists look to a single defense or a theodicy to address the problem of evil, right? Some responses target particular aspects of the problem that others seem inadequate to deal with. So he tells us that a theodicy is not required, as you have mentioned here, to answer every question in order to be true or useful. This means that not all responses are mutually exclusive, right? They don't exclude one another. And he says that many apologists champion a cumulative approach where they use many different arguments, right? Theodicies. And he says there's nothing wrong with this as long as one theodicy does not contradict what another one says, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. I probably would put another stipulation on there is if it's at the very least not explicitly denied in Scripture, but probably the best one is that it's supported with Scripture. Mm-hmm. Because we're making not just a general case for a general God, we're making a specific case for a specific God, and that's the God of the Bible. So. Yeah. I'm sure Christensen had that in mind when he talked about this. I just thought, yeah, maybe needs an extra little commentary on there. So